We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
For me, you know, just get out there and get back accustomed to being in a game. It was fun. Everything went well. Threw all the pitches I needed to throw, and then on to the next one, just to keep building up pitch count. It went well. I'd like to have went back out, and I asked to go back out, but you know, it's early in spring here. So pitch count wise, last live BP, I was more than I was today. So I was looking forward, to going back out. But they've got a plan and we're in a good spot and everything physically feels good. So I'm looking forward to the next one.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to The Score. That is the White Sox starter, Lance Lynn. He struck out two in the first, one in the second. That gave him three for the day, two innings of work. And he worked with Jonathan Lucroy, who also got a hit. That's his third hit of the summer. So fascinating to see how the catcher battle is going, the backup catcher battle, obviously. But the starting catcher is not available with the knee injury. So that allows you to look at some of these guys. Zach Collins subbed in and picked off a runner at first base, David. So I think it's moving along nicely for the White Sox. They haven't won yet. But it doesn't matter in spring training.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's spring training. Yesterday was a very good day for new pitchers in town, on both sides of town. You had Lance Lynn, who wanted the ball and looked very sharp and looked like the workhorse that I think he's going to be for the White Sox. And then last night, you saw the Cubs dominate the Dodgers,
yes,
the defending World Series champions. And more importantly, I think specifically, Trevor Williams, he went two innings, had four strikeouts, Mully, and gave up four hits, but this was a guy that I think took a little bit of a step. We were wondering what the Cubs had in him. It's only one start. It's only two innings, but it's an encouraging start for him. And you look at the Cubs this week have gotten really good production, early glimpse. You feel good about Jock Peterson's week, Trevor Williams, and Zach Davies. The three new Cubs have given us something to get a little bit excited about. So Lance Lynn, Trevor Williams, good day for Chicago baseball.
And Trevor Williams' father will be delighted since he's lifelong Cub fan. Is it Richard? look, here's the thing. What was cool about Trevor Williams is apparently he's holding the ball differently on his slider, and they're working through the pitch lab with him. So we're watching this kind of wild experiment that's going on with the pitch lab, giving him a little something, helping him a little bit, and he's trying to get back to the pitcher that he once was, but hasn't been in a while. So we'll see if that works out. That's the idea the Cubs had when they signed him, that they could fix whatever it was that was wrong.
Early result is obviously just two innings, but, yeah, that's a good start. It's a good place to build off of. And so Trevor Williams, you don't know where he fits, how he fits. Maybe he's your fifth starter. That would seem to be the most logical place to pencil him in. Then what else do you do with your other guys? It'd be great if the Cubs have that problem about what to do with consistent starting pitchers. Zach Davies was very good this week, as we pointed out. I liked what I saw from a Cubs game perspective, flipping around between that and the hockey, Mully, was that Nico Hoerner had three hits. And there's a lot of questions surrounding Nico Hoerner needing to take that next step. Bruce and I talked to him last Saturday morning on Inside the Clubhouse, and he spoke about opening his stance to be more athletic, to maybe see the ball a little bit better, and do things that we saw him do last night when he got three hits. If he takes that next step, that's a huge thing for the Cubs.
No question about it. I mean, they want him to have that job, and he needs to just be the guy that he is and not worry about anything else. I think he's a good defensive player. I think if he can get his hits, then he becomes a real important element of this thing. I was listening to the broadcast, and they were talking a little bit at one point about the batting order and how you're going to use different guys. And it's fascinating because I think we know that Ian Happ is going to be the leadoff guy because there's been, I believe David Ross came out and said, guess what? Ian Happ's going to be the leadoff guy. And that's fine. But then how do you line him up, right? And I think that when you look at it, I would go with Bryant, then Rizzo, and then probably Jock Peterson, and then I would put Contreras. I mean, I think they've got different options about how they're going to line them up, but I think more so maybe this season than in previous ones, you've got to get production out of the top half of that lineup. That's where the production has to be.
I would go Happ, Bryant, Rizzo, Javi, Jock, Contreras, Hayward, Nico. That would be my opening day lineup in that order. And I just think that makes the most sense. I did like the fact that Rossi, with conviction, named Ian Happ his leadoff hitter. You know, we'll see how that goes. I think he's done that before. I just there aren't a lot of young developing players on the Cubs. It's not like they have a history even recently of bringing guys up, drafting guys, you know, in the last couple of years. Nico Horner's ascent has been quick, and I think that along the way you wonder if he's going to hit these spells. How he handles failure is going to be determined of how well he what kind of year he has and how quickly they can count on him. So he's the one guy in that everyday lineup that you wonder about. They went out and they got Sogard maybe because of those questions.
Right.
So it's good to see him kind of get off this fast start.
I'll be curious to see today because Millsy is the starter, but we also know that Craig Kimbrell will be pitching at some point or other. And it's kind of fascinating because I think you need Millsy to be pretty good as much as you need Kimbrell to be great, right? I think Kimbrell has to be a higher standard of closer than he's been because you don't really have as many options behind him. I love the Stropey story, but it's a minor league contract. You know, keep things in perspective. But I really think that if Kimbrell isn't the guy, then who is the guy? And then you got to also ask yourself if you feel good about your first couple starters, if you got a project player in there, if Arrieta's trying to do something, isn't it important for Mills to be the kind of player, the guy capable of throwing a no-hitter with defense behind him? Doesn't he have to be a pretty good fourth, third maybe type starter on this for this unit to actually exceed?
Ideally, yeah. I mean, ideally, he's 29. He's not youngish anymore.
No.
He certainly has a lot of good years ahead of him, ideally. But, yeah, this is the time you want him to take that step and solidify his spot in the rotation. And yet you're exactly right. If that doesn't happen, or at least that doesn't look like it's going to be the case this spring, you still have guys you can choose from. You don't need Alec Mills to succeed or to have a strong spring as badly as you need Craig Kimbrell to regain the form that made him the closer that was so attractive to you a couple of years ago when you went out and you paid him, and then his tenure as a Cub has been rocky, to say the least. You need him to stabilize things because you don't have as many options outside of Craig Kimbrell in that back end of that bullpen as you do, say, if Alec Mills doesn't have a consistent spring. You do have other guys you could slot into his place in the rotation. Craig Kimbrell, with Rowan Wick's injury, his
right.
consistency becomes even greater. And if he's bad, it's hard to envision the Cubs being any good.
You know, he's obviously, his contract is coming up here. We never talk about him for obvious reasons because he's not perceived to be a part of the future. Is there anything that he could do to change that? Do you think that if he, and again, I'm not predicting it, but would you imagine that if he can kind of regain form, there's a chance, given that there probably won't be a monster market for the guy next year, that you could bring him back?
I would be very hesitant in doing that. You know, let it play out. I don't think that 34-year-old closers, which he would be next year in the offseason, are the kind of guys that you accumulate if you have, you know, unless he just is lights out. And even then, relievers tend to be year to year, you know, at some point in time when they get to that stage of their career. So I would be very cautious if the Cubs are, let's put it this way. On the list of contract extensions to consider, his would be pretty low on the list when you look at the Cubs roster.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't see any way. I think that's the problem I have with that, David, is that there, as much as he's the closer, as much as you say you believe in him, it's also, okay, we got one more year of this, and then we can move on. I don't get the sense that there is this kind of belief behind the guy as much as everyone wants to pretend there is.
Well, you got to get one more year out of him. You when you got him in 2019, the idea was for 3 years he was going to give you that, remove the doubt in the ninth inning. And so this is the third season of that experiment, of that sort of implied promise. So that's as far as I think he can take you. To expect more than that, given what we have seen from him and given where he is in his career, I just don't know that that would be wise. You need somebody else to emerge. You need somebody else to develop. And if that doesn't happen, you can always go via free agency, as we saw the White Sox do this year, as we saw the Twins do this offseason. You can buy a reliever, because that's why Kimbrel's in Chicago. The Cubs went out and they paid for him. It took a little longer than people would have liked, but you can find a closer in free agency.
Yeah, I hope he's good, because if he isn't, that's a huge problem.
You think he will be?
And it's hard to predict that, given how awful he was when he first got here and how mediocre he's kind of become. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Nobody likes a guy doing a Paul Wertheimer impersonation. That was an old boss of mine who walked like this. It's just it's a very bizarre kind of Kimbrel. It rings hollow when the ball's not moving at all.
I think the Cubs have actually a team option. When you look at closer at the contract,
oh, is that right?
It's a $16 million team option. It's a $1 million buyout, so they can get out of it. And I have a hard time seeing them exercise that option, because that would be, let's look at the way that they're spending money or not spending money this offseason. Yeah. I have a hard time envisioning them for a 34-year-old closer. $16 million is pretty hefty.
So you could save $15 million of the $16. That seems like a pretty obvious answer to the whole thing. But, you know, hey, who knows? Stranger things have happened, just not on this planet. I'll be fascinated to see how this team, if any of this, what we're seeing in spring training carries over. You know, they just seem better than people thought, if that's fair to say. I think when you look at them and the different things they're doing, it feels like, you know, we've underestimated the Cubs, frankly.
Maybe. I think there's going to be an element of that because of what I alluded to earlier. When you have new players, I mean, what is the reason that we get so excited about new players on the teams that we follow? Is because you kind of like the change. It's exciting. It's new. It's fresh. And so when Jock Peterson goes deep and Zach Davies looks really pretty much in command, and Trevor Williams has the kind of outing he did last night against the Dodgers, you're encouraged. And then you see Anthony Rizzo hit the ball a country mile. And, you know, Javi's talking and sounding like Javi talked and sounded when things were going well. So this is still very early in the process, but you want to believe that all the moves they made, there was rhyme and reason to them. And so, yeah, it's a good week for the Cubs, because nothing's gone wrong yet. And the new guys you got have delivered quickly, so you like to see those immediate results. So, but I'm not sure. Let's let it play out a little bit more.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of time to figure out what they are. But I have been I've been encouraged by the idea of being able to go see a game, and I've been encouraged by the idea that on both sides of town they can be productive. Now, Jackie Bradley Jr. was signed yesterday by Milwaukee, or they reached an agreement on a two-year, was it $24 million deal? He's kind of the last big-name free agent to go off the board, and there's Milwaukee again. You know, they do that. They kind of are the team that kind of grabs at someone. And now all of a sudden they've got three gold glove guys in their outfield. They've got three all-stars in their outfield. I don't know how you feel about him as a player, but I think that could affect the way we look at Milwaukee in terms of the division this year.
That was a sneaky good move. They wait until spring training opens. He's still on the market. You look at the cost for somebody who is potentially as good as he might be, stays healthy and kind of is that guy for them. 2 years, $24 million is a relative bargain in baseball, and that was a good move. So they are in a position where they're the Brewers, and you never know what to expect from the pesky Brewers, except for they're going to be pesky, and they're going to be there. And so the Cardinals, they made the big, bold move for Arenado, and now the Brewers make this move. So, yeah, the division has gotten better in the last, you know, several weeks as moves have been made. We kept waiting for that to happen, and now, you know, that is something that, you know, that outfield, yeah, pretty solid.
Yeah, and I think that I think that when we think about this idea of fans going to games, doesn't that change the way we look at the game a little bit? I mean, wouldn't that help the Cubs a ton? Doesn't Javi Baez, he's talked about needing an audience. Doesn't that help him? On both sides of town, I think 12,000 people, if that's what it ends up being, I think you'd fill the stands. I don't think there'd be an unsold ticket on either side of town.
Well, based on what they dealt with last year, 12,000 fans will, I think, feel and create an atmosphere like a full house, just because everything is relative. And when you are playing games in a ballpark where it is so quiet, you can hear the chatter in the opposing dugout, which is something we discussed last year, and you welcome 12,000 fans in, yeah, you're gonna feel that adrenaline, and it's gonna be something that it's not gonna resemble normalcy, because normalcy is a full house, but it will be as close as you can get under the circumstances, and it will be welcome for everybody, and I think it will have an effect on guys like Javi Baez, because now they can perform again in front of the audience the way they're used to doing that, and there are no more excuses. So I just think that's a good sign for baseball fans. You wonder how many fans will have sort of some anxiety about going back, but I think eventually, as things stay safe and they're protected, that'll change too.
312-644-6767. We're going to get to more baseball talk, but we got the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How does the White Sox plan to use Michael Kopech in the bullpen affect his development from thrower to pitcher, especially when he acknowledges life as a reliever might involve adding, quote, a tick or two in velocity? Do you think this plan is for a half season, full season, or more?
Well, I think that they're trying to be smart about how they use Michael Kopech, and I think that part of the problem here is the number of innings that you're going to put on that arm, because Michael Kopech has not played in a couple of years. Obviously, he had the injury and then the opt-out. I think it's more about slowly building up his arm than it is about worrying about the starter aspect of it. I think that initially they can use him and use him out of the bullpen, and I think he'll be an effective weapon because of his talent and obviously his velocity. you know, I hope he doesn't go up a tick or two. I hope he's talked out of that, and I think they're going to be very careful about how they use him. But I think I would imagine that he will open the year in the bullpen. They'll see how effective he is, and then eventually maybe get down to the minor leagues and stretch out and come back as a starter if indeed that's what's needed. I thought it was kind of fascinating as I was hearing different people talk about how to use pitching and how to make sure that you get the right number of innings from everyone. This is one of the greatest challenges of this season because of the fact that that you didn't have last year. You didn't have a full season. So it's about building up arms. I think with him, it's more about taking advantage of how he can help you, but it's more about the fact that the minor leagues are going to be a month later than the actual season opener. So you want him there, you want him part of the team, and you want to use him in a way that will be effective, which, of course, is out of the bullpen.
It was great to hear Michael Kopech talk about pitching and Michael Kopech talk about being in the mix and being part of the team and how much he missed that and how much he needs that. Whether or not the bullpen is the best place for him, I think it is the place for him now, not later, but sooner. And maybe that is somebody who you're going to rely upon later as a starter. I could see that. That's the way he's projected long term. Makes a lot of sense. The only thing you do maybe worry about, because you worry about everything when it comes to a young arm this talented and a young player this big, who's going to be as big of a part of your future as Michael Kopech is relief pitchers come into games, guys as talented as him, and by definition is high leverage. And so there's going to be more condensed into that inning or two than over, you know, over the 5 or 6 innings you might expect to go as a starter. So I think the process will change and the thought process will he'll have to adjust and adapt. It sounds like he's on the right track. I don't know, you know, when he says go up a tick or two, yeah, you do worry a little bit more about him trying to reach back and find that, and a guy with his history, whether or not that's a good idea or not. But I think you don't want to overreact. You don't want to worry about something that isn't there necessarily. Let it evolve. But this is one of the most talented pitchers that the White Sox have in their organization. And so I guess from the minimum is that you're glad that he's going to be part of this, and you can see the potential that is, in my mind, enormous.
A pick six to end the half!
Chris Getz told us yesterday he thinks Jimmy Lambert and Jonathan Stever could be breakout players for the White Sox, and Tony La Russa said they will remain stretched out to remain available for needed starts. How many starts do you see for each guy, more or less than Carlos Rodon and Ronaldo Lopez?
Well, it better not be more. And I think if it's more, that's a bad sign for the White Sox. In a perfect world, you have Ronaldo Lopez even not getting that many starts, except for guys who maybe need a day or go on the DL for a short period of time. But the idea and the objective every March is to, you want to go into your season and remain as healthy as possible and have your 5 main starters make as many of those starts as they're scheduled to make. I mean, 5 guys with 31 starts apiece would be the ideal. That's not going to happen, but I like the faith that is shown in Stever. I like the idea that Lambert is going to be a fixture down the road, but that's far down the road. If they are as big of a part of the mix as that question suggests, I think something's gone terribly wrong with the White Sox rotation. That doesn't mean those guys couldn't handle the added responsibility, but that is certainly not by design. The design is for Dylan Cease to take a step forward, Carlos Rodon to stay healthy, and your big three to be your big three, and then everything else fall into place.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned 5 guys, because I haven't had a hamburger probably 2 or 3 months. I'm going to get that one on the menu. I love a good hamburger.
Really?
Thank you,
it's
Dave.
Friday.
Yeah.
Not
When's
today,
the last time
Molly?
You had a burger? Have you had a burger of late?
It's been a while. Turkey burgers are my favorite, but not a big juicy hamburger. No, you're right.
Well, no,
thank
but I'm
you.
Saying, like, I haven't used the Traeger in quite a long time because it's been buried under 2 feet of snow. So maybe I'll dig that out this weekend. But very good call, David. Thank you for that. I hate to say it, but I would imagine that Jimmy Lambert in particular is going to have more starts than Carlos Rodon. I think that Carlos, unfortunately, I don't have faith in him being able to hold up, because I have watched him not hold up for a very long time. So I think he starts the season as your fifth starter, and I think he's got probably 50 innings in him, 55 innings in him. And I think that Ronaldo may be ineffective, and I think Jimmy Lambert will be this year's Dane Dunning, the guy they bring up, and you'll be like, wow, this guy's a pretty good pitcher. What are we going to do with him? He really could be pretty good. I think Jonathan Stever, I'm going to go with like two or three starts top, just because you're going to need different guys as the year goes on. Maybe you got a Keuchel feeling a little bit of the back. That happens sometimes. You get that back and it locks up on you and you just don't feel like you can throw. So I'm going to go with Jimmy Lambert as in the Dane Dunning role from last year, and he's going to end up with more starts than Carlos, sadly. I'd love it if Carlos Rodon could stay healthy, but unfortunately it seems inevitable, doesn't it, that this is not going to work out, unfortunately. Especially, you know, the idea that you saw something with them and now we're going to work on it and, hey, move your foot over here. I you know, the minute you start pitching, it's going to be the same thing. Yeah, so that's my take.
A pick six of 100 yards!
Cubs manager David Ross said he plans to use Chris Bryant's defensive versatility this season, especially with a left-handed heavy outfield. Could the ability to play third base and outfield make Bryant a more attractive trade piece, or does it all come down to his bat?
Why do we keep trading him? I feel bad about this question because, once again, we're not talking about his versatility. We're talking about trade bait. And I, unfortunately, that's just the position you're in. And hopefully you get to the trade deadline and they're looking to add. They're not looking to move. But I don't know what they're going to do because you got expiring contracts. You got guys you can't lose for nothing. So I understand the question. I would say that it all comes down to his bat. If the bat is back, there'll be a market. If he hits like he did a year ago, then you'll be just trying to get rid of him for something.
Chris Bryant's defensive versatility is what makes him different from a lot of guys. That's always been the case, though. Joe Maddon found ways to use him, and you could pencil him in left, right, or center. He's that good of an athlete. I think you could see him playing all three positions, as we have since he's come up. Stop trading him, Molly. Stop doing this to us. I mean, we don't need to worry about this until it's time. You still want to ship him out of town.
What are you talking about?
Slow down.
Play me. It's the question, not me.
Okay. The bat is obviously what's going to determine whether or not how motivated the Cubs are maybe to keep him, to trade him, and how attractive he looks to other teams. He's got a hit, period. End of story.
Yep.
Pick six.
How much will you engage with NBA All-Star festivities Sunday? Are you more interested in Zach LaVine playing or participating in the three-point contest? Do you like the way teams were drafted?
Yeah, I suppose it was kind of fun. I mean, look, NBA players picking their teams, that's like a typical day in the NBA, right? It's like the star goes out and he says, I want him, go get him, and the general manager responds. I will look forward to the game because Zach LaVine finally gets a chance to play in one. I am more curious, I guess, in how the three-point contest goes because it's a loaded field. They're doing it all in the same day. And Zach LaVine has a strategy this year. Maybe he's learned from it. So I'm curious what it would feel like to watch him win it. That would be cool. And the game itself, I'll try. I will try. But that's a hard thing. Last year, it got good at the end. And so I will definitely see it through because we're going to talk about it on Monday. But I hope it is as exciting as it was last year.
I will be watching. I will be dutiful. But my priority on Sunday is going to be the Missouri Valley Conference Championship, provided the Loyola Ramblers get there. They play today, David. I hope you've got your DVR all fired
up. Arch Madness, of course.
11 a.m. They play Southern Illinois. And you would think that the Ramblers can advance in the tournament, and you would think that if they're rated, what are they, 20th in the country? Have they moved up? That they're going to hopefully win the Missouri Valley Conference Championship. But it's tough. It's a tough conference, and it's been a battle all year. And Southern at 11 a.m. if all goes well, then the Ramblers would be playing in the championship by Sunday. But who knows?
The question was about the NBA All-Star game.
Okay. So I think that you've got to really feed the ball more to the Joker. And that, of course, is King Krut. He is sort of the Joker of college basketball.
Okay. NBA All-Star. Sunday.
Oh, I'll watch that, too.
Okay. All right.
Go, Rambler!
Can you believe this? Pick six!
According to our guy, Shams Charania, the Bulls have registered interest in Cavs center Andre Drummond, who's been benched and is owed $28.7 million this year, which is about the same amount of Otto Porter Jr.'s contract. Would a Drummond for Porter swap make sense? If the Cavs don't want Porter but still want to unload Drummond, what's your interest level?
Well, I think Otto Porter's pretty good, don't you? Wouldn't he be great in Cleveland? Listen, Otto Porter's not part of the future of this team. There's no way, because he's never going to make the kind of money he's made. They're just waiting for that number to come off the books, and then they can decide where they're going to invest it, if it's with their own or someplace else, or a combination thereof. So I think it makes sense to go for a Drummond for Porter swap. And if you're Cleveland and you got a guy that you're not playing, why not have a guy that can't play? So you can take on an injured guy. He's supposed to come back at some point. And I mean this sincerely. He's a very useful player. It's just, unfortunately, he's not available. And that means that if you're useful and you can't actually play, then you're useless.
Yeah, I've never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland. I don't know.
Okay, Joakim.
Okay, so Otto Porter may not want to go, but if they want to make that deal, because of the reasons we pointed out in the 5 o'clock hour, the yep. Bulls are taking a practical approach to wanting to win now and address a weakness this season, then that's a swap I would probably make, because you have depth issues that in the paint, and you have defensive problems in the interior, and Otto Porter Jr. is not somebody that you're likely to miss because you haven't missed him already. And so if they want to make that deal, I'd be open for business if I'm AK and Mark Eversley. I don't know if the Cavaliers want to do that. And if they don't want to do that, I don't know that that's a salary you want to add just to make a run. So I think you need to be very cautious in taking on that kind of money without anything going out the other way.
You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation.
That is a pick six!
What did you make of the report from ESPN's Jeremy Fowler that stated he thought Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson was interested in the Bears because of, quote, an offensive-minded coach, intriguing market, and improving offensive line? How would you rank those factors in terms of appeal to a franchise quarterback who might consider approving a trade to the Bears? Anything the report left out?
Yeah, the report left out how the offensive-minded coach has done since bringing his offense to Chicago. I mean, that's the most amusing thing about it is I love the idea. I do people in Chicago think of Matt Nagy as an offensive guru still? I don't know 3 years into this if that is an accurate label. I was struck by, Mully, yesterday, this report from Jeremy Fowler, respected ESPN NFL reporter, but how his tweet was taken as all of a sudden the leap was made. I think people want to make this leap very badly, that all of a sudden Russell Wilson thought the Bears offensive line was pretty good. I don't think it said that. I think it said that he thinks that was why he liked the Bears or included them. He thinks that this is that. I don't know until we hear from Russell Wilson or we hear from a more qualified source speaking on his behalf, we can assume that he likes the offensive line as much as people really badly want to like the Bears offensive line, Matt Nagy or anything. Now, the market size, that makes sense because of who Russell Wilson is and what it has to offer. But the rest of it, I think, is a leap I'm not able or willing to take yet.
Yeah, I think number one would be the market. And I think that number two would be that we are a transportation hub in the center of the country. And, you know, the the nominal second city, probably third, but his wife's a pop star. Does anybody pay attention to these things? That would allow her to get on the road to do some things and not have to go back to the Pacific Northwest, not have to cross a continent every time she wanted to do a gig. So I get it. You know, she's his wife. They've got a family, and that's their concern. But at some point, when you got the music in you, you got to share that with everyone else. And I think what is Dustin's line, happy wife, happy life, I think that would be a very important aspect of him moving here.
So you think it had more to do with her pop career than Alex Barr's?
I think it has a lot more to do with her pop career than a perhaps improved line, which might not be improved, or a genius quarterback coach who might not be. So I'm going to go with with the market size for him and the market size for her.
I'm with you.
I'm glad we can agree. All right, we're going to bring in Bruce. We're going to talk some baseball. Maybe we'll preview the big show tomorrow as well. It's Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
This is 670 The Score, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station, period. Thanks for keeping us on top, Chicago. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Play ball!
Bruce Levine, 670 The Score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a cheetah can run. And as far as I know, cheetahs are speedy.
I went ahead and broke the story on Twitter, and then, of course, had to write a story on the website at 670thescore.com.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I loved you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love talking to The Score's baseball expert, Bruce Levine. And The Score Hotline is presented by Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, North Avenue, or ap4.com. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, it's great Friday, and we're getting closer and closer to opening day. I think we're going to hear about fans in the stands for both the White Sox and Cubs very soon. So with that in mind, it should be an exciting couple of weeks here as we prepare for baseball.
So let's say that there are fans in the stands on opening day. Let's just, for the sake of the argument, say that they got the percentage of fans they were hoping for, and maybe that can increase as the year goes on. How does that affect the budget of the team? Does, and I'm talking specifically about the Cubs, does the idea of fans and all of the kind of circus that surrounds that, more money coming into the baseball operations, does that make them buyers at the trade deadline as opposed to sellers? Does that make them contract givers at the deadline as opposed to sellers? How does it work?
Depends how many show up and how the ancillary parts of what's going on there does. You know, do they sell as much food? Do they sell as much beer? Do the LLCs do as well on the outside in the restaurants and businesses around Wrigley? It's an impossible question to answer for me and for them right now because you don't know what the percent is going to be. You don't know on April 2nd. After opening day, where you're going to sell out and probably sell, let's say they allow 25%, and you know you're allowed to put 10,000 or 8,000 or 9,000 people in there. You don't know on April 2nd how many people are actually going to show up on a rainy April 2nd day for the second day of the season. So, you know, as far as counting money, I don't think they're going to be able to for a long time. It just something that they'll have to project as they move toward July, Mike, you know, as to what kind of money they have. And is it moving toward September 1st, a full house? I think that's what the projection is hopeful that, you know, the last 15 days of the year for Chicago teams, you will have upwards of a full house. But we're projecting way past where we're at right now.
I think if we learned one thing yesterday, Bruce, from that poll that was released, is that a Sox team that has the booziest fan base is going to sell plenty of beer. So that won't be a problem. There are going to be long lines at the concession stand. Okay, let's look at the baseball yesterday. Lance Lynn was looked like the workhorse. He wanted to go out for another inning. Michael Kopech talked about his evolving role. Before we get to the Cubs, Bruce, let's look at the White Sox pitching staff. What did you hear and see yesterday that stood out to you?
Well, I think the thing, being on a Zoom with Kopech, you can tell the look in his eyes that he's really happy to just be a baseball player again, not a celebrity on Twitter, Instagram, but a guy that is just happy to, after 2 years, to be back and hopefully contributing, because they project him being in the major league bullpen. He's happy about that, bringing him along after 2 years of being inactive. It's going to take a while to build his arm up. It's not going to be all done in 2021. So bringing him along in the bullpen makes a lot of sense. Let's say for the first month or month and a half of the season, he's a contributor in the bullpen, maybe a very good one. And at some point, when the minor leagues start in May or later, you want to stretch him out and send him to, one of the minor league teams and stretch out to be a starter again. There's a lot of options there for him, but he is certainly on the same page with the White Sox brass. They all have a good feel for it. La Russa has talked about it, how he'll use him. So from all of that, I see a different guy and a guy that can be very productive for him. As far as Lynn goes, certainly he feels he's already in early spring form. He wanted to go another inning, and they talked him out of it. They said, two is enough. This guy is a horse. I asked him, is it just a mentality for him? He said, no. He said, I'm just 6'5 and 250 pounds. I'm a strong guy. I'm ready to go. That was a simple answer for why he wanted to continue to be out there yesterday.
I just wonder, when we talk about this, we talk about the Kopech thing, do we couple him with Garrett Crochet? Is it different with Crochet in terms, they've talked about him being an elite starter in the future for them as well. Is it different because Kopech's had the surgery and we don't know if Crochet is going to eventually need it, if he's thrown 100-plus miles an hour? Is he better out of the bullpen? We talk about Jimmy Lambert and Jonathan Stever like they're connected, like both guys are going to get stretched out, remain stretched out, and maybe be able to jump in should you need it, which everyone believes you probably will, given the amount of innings you got to cover for a team. So those are a couple of guys. If you moved Kopech down, would you move Crochet down? Are they connected in your mind in any way, or just because they're fireballers, we add them together?
You mean move them down where?
To the minor leagues to stretch out.
Oh, I see. Those are all possibilities, but having those power arms in the bullpen is so important in today's baseball. I mean, we don't have to tell anybody how quickly, starters get out of there. And we don't know if the four and five in the rotation is going to be able to make, five innings plus or six innings every time out. So having these power arms to bridge the gap. And again, let's say the plan for Crochet and for Kopech are similar, and that, hey, we'll get two innings out of them in games we need them twice a week, okay, or three times a week. Or the plan for Crochet could be we want one inning three times a week. You're going to get power, and if they have their location, it's going to be an uncomfortable bat for the offense that they're facing. So there's a lot of ways they can go with this. They haven't shared exactly what it's going to be, but these are guys, as you said, Mike, they might slide them down to the minor leagues at some point. So seeing them extended innings rather than just one inning guys is a possibility that we could be looking at.
Bruce, moving to the Cubs, very interesting week. When you have new players like Jock Peterson, who homered, and then Zach Davies looked pretty sharp in command. And last night, Trevor Williams looked good against the Dodgers in two innings. Austin Romine even homered to kind of cap the week of newcomers. That it's really been really positive for the Cubs. How do you explain the fact that maybe gets people excited, the fact because the offseason with the Cubs was contained so much like questions and so many questions and consternation over what they weren't doing? When you have new guys get off to this kind of start in spring training, even though it's spring training, it is encouraging.
It is, and I think, you know, watching, you know, the pitchers pitch well, and I think a real shot in the arm yesterday was Williams, who nobody talks about, but was a 14-game winner in 2018 for the Pirates. You know, getting into the pitch lab there and, going in there with Tommy Hotovy and some of the other people in there, he has, he's rediscovered his sinker. And if you watch some of the highlights from his outing yesterday, it was nasty. So, getting these guys straightened out, you know, some of these pitchers that have done well in the past, like Williams, who could be a real nice surprise for them, it's encouraging. The offense, you know, it used to be a very prideful offense, you know, something we have the biggest sluggers in the game. And I think they're feeling like they're going to get back toward that. You know, David Ross has talked to them about, hey, be a little greedy in your at-bats this year. You know, even if you're free agents, don't let that encumber you from attacking the zone early and being Chris Bryant, being Javier Baez, being Wilson Contreras. In other words, don't work the counts to the point where you're in a 3-2 situation and you strike out. If you see the pitch early, be the guy you are. Be aggressive and, hit it with authority. I think that is exactly the message that he sent to them. So you're going to see a more aggressive offense, hopefully laying off of the fastball, the fourth seam fastball out of the zone and the changeup in the dirt. That was the problem for them last year.
Bruce, you talk about the pitch lab like it's an actual place. So they go into like this kind
it
of.
It is. They wear long white coats.
That's what I see. Antiseptic smell. I can smell it right now. And they draw some blood from the guy and then they spin it around. I mean, what? Describe the pitch lab. It's theoretical more than anything else, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Of course it is. But, you know, they have everything on computer that they need. They have. You know, they have all kinds of just different data that they use to make sure that the guy is throwing the pitch correctly. They have, you can see the repetition of him from 2000, let's say Williams, the way he threw the ball in 2018 compared to now.
Yeah.
They can put this up on a big screen and watch that he was the last year or two, he's pulling off toward first base and he's not following through east and west. Or north and south, he's trailing off east and west. Therefore, he's not getting enough depth in his pitch. It's not all that complicated, but it is a lab in the sense that they have all this data and they use it comparatively. And it's a good thing for all the players, and it's wonderful information for them to be able to learn off of.
Dr. Hotovy, we have a problem.
What inside the clubhouse tomorrow, 9 a.m., it's two of my favorite people. Tell us what you guys will be discussing.
David Hall and I will be talking about everything going on in spring training. We'll be taking their calls at 312-644-6767, and we will be efforting to get guests as we speak right now. We are White Sox and Cubwise for our show from 9 to 11. Guys, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Okay, look forward to it, Bruce.
Yeah, yep. That's one of the great listens on the score. So I will be looking forward to it too. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. When he said they brought him into the lab, I mean, David, I have had the misfortune of having a golf lesson one time where I got to see my swing and the guy was breaking it down. And I was just like, oh, is that how I look golfing? Well, I'll have to give that game up. It was awful. It just wasn't at all the way I envisioned myself actually looking with a golf club in my hand. And I think that maybe that's what the pitch lab is about kind of, if you think about it, if you've ever had a golf lesson and seen yourself swing, you're seeing yourself throw. You can see what you did before. You know, we talk about the grip that they've worked on with his slider that has changed. So it's not an antiseptic.
It's not a windowless building with everyone walking around in hazmat suits. Okay. No.
Yeah. It's how they built Wolverine. All right. We'll sounds great. All right. Well, we got to get to some football talk. There's some unbelievable possible rule changes that will change the NFL, some for the good and some for the bad. And we'll talk about it next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.